immersed in what we did as youngsters more than 50 years ago. And I hope that some of the lessons of what we did right and what we did wrong will resonate with younger people these days.
Well, again, congratulations. And that film is called, the documentary short is called Takeover. That does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Has job openings. You can go to democracynow.org to learn about the applications for Human Resources Manager. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. A very happy birthday, belated birthday to Chirina Nadura. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Gazda, Messiah Rosner, Meen Sheikh, Mary Tarasena, Tammy Warnock, Chirina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, I mean, Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Je revois la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Éperdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emportés par la foule qui nous traîne, nous entraîne, écrasés d'un contre l'autre.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Then I dig, and I know you dig, because I got four requests for this thing already today. Strutting right with it.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, half of Multnomah County predicted to contract COVID this month. City Council searches for police body cam vendor. And in international news, Tonga fears new infections arriving with international aid. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 26, 2022. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. The Oregon Health Authority issued a shocking prediction yesterday that half of Multnomah County could become infected with COVID-19 this month. With 86% of the county vaccinated and case counts declining in other parts of the nation, many Portlanders were hopeful for a reprieve. However, the highly infectious Omicron variant has proven capable of infecting even people with booster vaccines. Two-thirds of new cases are breakthrough infections, including 13% for boosted individuals. Still, lead health officer Jennifer Vines reminded OPB that vaccinations are extremely effective at keeping the infected out of the emergency room. The vast majority of hospitalized patients are unvaccinated, and only 41 of 2,000 hospital beds remain available in the Tri-County area.
Passage of a new bill in the state legislature would allow Oregonians to pump their own gasoline. House Bill 4151 authorizes self-service retail dispensing of Class 1 flammable liquids. Gas stations would offer the option but not require it. Self-service would take place alongside pumps with a station attendant. Oregon has had a ban on drivers pumping their own gasoline for 7 decades. But it has not been set in stone. In 2015, the law was amended to allow stations in rural areas, those with fewer than 40,000 residents, to offer self-service gas between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. In 2018, those counties affected were allowed to offer self-service at any time. Temporary exceptions allowing self-service were also offered early in the COVID pandemic and during a major heat wave to keep attendants from standing out in the sun for prolonged periods. The legislative record lists 17 reasons why Oregonians should not be allowed to pump their own gasoline. They are based mostly on the premise that pumping is a hazardous activity that requires specialized training. At least two of those provisions are based on Oregon's weather. One says wet pavement might cause a consumer pumping their own gas to slip and fall. Another says the state has reduced visibility, which increases the risk someone outside a car could succumb to a criminal attack. Proponents say passage would help mitigate the attendant workforce shortages caused by COVID. Opponents might claim charging higher rates for full service in states allowing both options discriminates against customers with lower income. However, House Bill 4151 calls for identical prices regardless of who pumps. House Bill 4151 was filed ahead of the legislative session to begin February 1st. It is supported by members of both parties in both legislative chambers. If the bill passes, New Jersey will be the only U.S. state banning self-service gasoline. First introduced in 2014, the Portland Police Bureau's body cam pilot program may finally make it off the ground. The Portland City Council begins searching for a vendor this week. Police body cams have become widespread in other departments, but the PPB remains unequipped despite its record of violence against protesters and the mentally ill. With a $2.6 million budget, the council plans to have a vendor selected by July at the latest and hopes to roll out cameras by the end of the year. Still, the PPB has not settled on a coherent body cam policy. Previous attempts to codify a body cam policy were rejected by the public for various reasons, such as allowing SWAT teams to leave cameras behind and restricting the ability of supervisors to review footage. Other proposals were rejected by the police union, which demanded that officers who use force be able to review body cam footage before writing a report. This particular request goes against the recommendations of the Department of Justice. A compromise between these two perspectives may be elusive, and any final policy will have to be approved by the Department of Justice. Seattle has put up more buildings than any other U.S. city since the pandemic, driven by the growing wealth of the city's resident tech companies, including Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. One group that hasn't benefited from the construction boom are the concrete mixers and construction workers themselves. 330 concrete mixer drivers and plant workers are striking over unfair labor practices, including long and unpredictable hours. Unionized employees say construction companies refuse to negotiate in good faith, preferring drawn-out legal battles meant to bankrupt unions and force workers into submission. The strike began last November at Gary Merlino Construction, which allowed a worker contract to expire in July without negotiating an acceptable renewal. Workers claim the proposed contract would result in decreased compensation adjusted for price of living expenses and refused to find health care for retirees. Since then, workers at Stoneway Concrete, Cadman, Kell Portland, Salmon Bay Sand and Gravel, and Lehigh Cement have joined the general strike. Construction workers were considered essential during the height of the pandemic and worked in person while corporate employees worked from home. Reporting for KBOO News by Ethan Sandweiss. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Critics say a new bill in Wisconsin State House could largely outlaw peaceful protest. State Democrats and human rights activists are sounding alarms. Wisconsin's Jonah Chester has more on the story.
What is a riot and what's a protest? That was the question before the Wisconsin legislature on Tuesday as lawmakers debated and passed a bill to set new law enforcement standards for unlawful assemblies. The bill would categorize as a riot any unlawful assembly where a single person either commits or threatens an act of violence or engages in violence that, quote, substantially obstructs law enforcement or another governmental function, unquote. Representative Francesca Hong, a Democrat from Madison, thinks the bill would target peaceful protesters.
It puts forward increased penalties while simultaneously paring back the rights of peaceful protesters and opening them up to criminal exposure for the misdeeds, the missteps of others.
The bill would make attending such an unlawful assembly a misdemeanor with a sentence of up to 9 months in jail. Republicans argue it would prevent property damage like that seen during protests in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd and shooting of Jacob Blake. In November 2020, shortly after the protests over Blake's shooting, the Kenosha Area Business Alliance told the New York Times 35 small businesses were destroyed during the unrest and about 80 were damaged. Representative Barbara Dietrich, a Republican from Oconomowoc, argues the bill is necessary to distinguish between a riot and a protest.
This bill does not blur the lines, but clarifies the difference between our First Amendment rights to protest and rioting.
Several law enforcement associations support the bill. Opponents include the American Civil Liberties Union, Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and the City of Milwaukee. With its passage in both the Assembly and Senate, the bill now goes to Governor Tony Evers for further consideration. For the Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Jonah Chester.
Senate Democrats are on the warpath, pushing through a huge bill providing military assistance to Ukraine and sanctioning Russia. The measure comes amid a massive Russian troop buildup on three of Ukraine's borders and a growing NATO presence in the region. $500 million are slated for Ukraine's military, cyber defense, and counter-propaganda programs. Some Republican pundits are accusing Biden of being weak on Russia, despite former President Trump's capitulations to Putin on Syria, election integrity, and NATO spending. Others are supporting Putin's attempts to annex Ukrainian territory. Russian state media replayed Tucker Carlson footage calling for the U.S. to back Russia in a future conflict. Tensions between Russia and Ukraine are at their worst since the 2014 invasion, when covert Russian troops annexed eastern Donetsk and the Crimean Peninsula. Russia demands assurances that Ukraine will never be allowed to join the military coalition NATO, but NATO member states are unwilling to capitulate. Ukraine seeks security assurances from its Western allies, but so far has received only fractured support. Germany, a key NATO partner, has refused to send military aid or allow foreign military equipment to pass through its borders. Germany remains highly dependent on Russian natural gas and fears that standing by Ukraine could mean provoking an energy crisis. Australia and the U.S. have offered natural gas to Europe in order to relieve Russian pressure. Ukraine gained independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. Despite its own language and history, Ukraine's identity as a nation has often been questioned by Russian state media. The island nation of Tonga has only had one reported case of COVID since the start of the pandemic. But that may soon change. 2 weeks ago, a catastrophic volcanic eruption and resultant tsunami devastated the island. Cut off from its neighbors after an important underwater cable was damaged, aid ships have begun to dock from Australia and New Zealand. The HMAS Adelaide set out from Brisbane, Australia on January 21st, carrying humanitarian aid. Since embarking, 30 members of the 600-strong crew have tested positive for COVID-19. The government of Tonga is taking precautions to ensure that humanitarian aid is the only thing transmitted by the HMAS Adelaide. Over 80% of Tonga's population of 100,000 has been vaccinated for COVID, but nonetheless, crew members of the Adelaide are preparing for a contactless delivery. Tonga lacks internet and fresh water in the wake of the volcanic eruption, which NASA has said was hundreds of times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. Several other aid missions have been turned away from Tonga when crew members tested positive with COVID. With more on Ukraine, vaccine mandates, and the U.S. Senate, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Vladimir Putin is obviously still the master of his game, but does he see a risk of miscalculation?
Former National Security Council Russia Director Fiona Hill expects Russia to invade Ukraine, arguing that Putin wants the United States out of the region.
It would be insane for them to go into Ukraine, but the worry is it might not be from his perspective because he's looking at different information and his mindset is very different.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden said he told Putin the U.S. would deploy thousands of troops to Eastern Europe if Russia continues to amass troops along Ukraine's border. Putin accused the U.S. of stoking tensions while Russia held military drills near the border. The Biden administration is withdrawing its vaccine or test mandate for businesses with at least 100 employees. 27 Republican-led states had challenged the mandate, and the Supreme Court ruled it was federal overreach. Meanwhile, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is vowing to fight the White House after the FDA pulled its emergency authorization for two COVID-19 drugs.
Outright revoked authorization for two very popular monoclonal antibody treatments that the state of Florida really pioneered over the summer and that we've worked hard to make available to our residents who needed treatment.
FDA says the drugs are ineffective against the Omicron variant, which accounts for the majority of cases, But proponents note that the Delta variant has not been fully eradicated. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's running for re-election in this year's midterms.
Our democracy is at risk because of assaults on the truth, the assault on the U.S. Capitol, and the state-by-state assault on voting rights. This election is crucial. Nothing less is at stake than our democracy.
The California Democrat turns 82 in March and had previously promised to step down as House leader after 2022. The leader of the right-wing group Oath Keepers pleaded not guilty to seditious conspiracy for his role in the January 6th Capitol riot. Stuart Rhodes' attorney says claims that he conspired to use force to stop the certification of the 2020 presidential election are fiction. Far-right conspiracy theorist Alex Jones says he met virtually with the House Select Committee investigating the attack and pleaded the fifth on the advice of counsel. Jones noted he wanted to answer questions but feared the committee would twist his words. A week before the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics begin, Republican U.S. Representatives Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington and Bob Latta of Ohio wrote a letter to NBC Universal executives citing concerns that China would censor TV coverage of the Games. Policy advisor for Hong Kong Watch, Joey Hsu, believes the U.S. should boycott the Games altogether over the communist country's human rights abuses.
Any form of participation in the upcoming 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics is equivalent to endorsing its escalating atrocities. And any form of appeasement policy is no different than allowing China to continue its oppression.
The U.S. is among 10 nations that are diplomatically boycotting the Games. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
KBU News poet Dan Raphael is distracted enough.
Do we really need a new war now? Aren't us common folks distracted enough by COVID, stagnant economies, and winter? Maybe the arms manufacturers are jealous of the obscene profits Big Pharma, Amazon, and others have been making. Sure, Putin's leading this. We don't know how unpopular he is, because even if they took polls in Russia, who'd be stupid enough to answer honestly? Same goes in China, where they locked down millions because a couple folks test positive. China's quietly ecstatic to have its two biggest rivals go after one another. Doesn't want to hear any more about Uyghurs. The U.S. continues denying humanitarian aid to Afghanis because our government's a sore loser, while our good friends, the Saudis, recently bombed a Yemeni prison, killing over 200. Damn the news. But what should I binge next? The show about a not-so-distant dystopia? The world uniting to fend off aliens? Or some elaborate costume drama showing how silly and venal the upper class used to be? Peace can't be passive. It won't be given a chance. How can we help peace? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's The Underground, and then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will climb into the 40s before decreasing tomorrow once again into the mid-30s. Expect light winds and nothing but clear skies. Folk musician Lucinda Williams turned 69 today. Today's quote comes from her. "I guess you could write a good song if your heart hadn't been broken, but I don't know of anyone whose heart hasn't been broken." Federal judges rejected a proposed Republican-drawn congressional map in Alabama today. Judges ruled the state legislature must redraw new maps that give black voters two districts with a majority black population, or in which black voters otherwise have the opportunity to elect a representative of their choice. Alabama's population is 27% black. The rejected map has only one black majority district out of seven. If lawmakers fail to pass a new map in 2 weeks, the court will appoint a third-party expert. The state's Republican Attorney General, Steve Marshall, has said his office plans to appeal the ruling soon. Meanwhile, in Tennessee, Republican lawmakers approved an aggressive plan to split Nashville into three majority Republican congressional districts. Nashville is a Democratic stronghold in the largely Republican state, and a quarter of eligible voters there are black. Under the new lines, black voters would be reduced to about 14% of the new 5th district, about 17 and 10% of the other two new districts that would include parts of Nashville. Jim Cooper, a Democrat who has represented that district for nearly 20 years, announced yesterday that he was retiring because of the redistricting. He explained, quote, I explored every possible way, including lawsuits, to stop the gerrymandering and to win one of the three new congressional districts that now divide Nashville. Cooper is the 29th House Democrat to announce they will not seek re-election in this year's midterms. Supreme Court Justice William Breyer is expected to retire at the end of the current term. Now it's up to Biden to replace the 83-year-old liberal-leaning justice. In March of 2020, Joe Biden had promised to appoint the first black female justice to the Supreme Court. Since Biden's election, some advocates have been pressuring Breyer to step down so that Biden could appoint another liberal justice while the Democrats still control the Senate. However, Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema do not always vote along with the rest of their party. Judicial appointments are exempt from the current Senate filibuster rules and require only a simple majority. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer promised that Biden's nominee to replace Breyer would be considered and confirmed by the Senate with all deliberate speed. Michigan is one of many states with anti-abortion trigger laws, set to kick off if the conservative-dominated Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. A ballot petition will give Michigan voters the option to enshrine the right to choose in the state constitution. With more on this story, here's Lily Bolke.
A coalition of advocates for reproductive freedom has filed a ballot proposal to affirm that every Michigan resident will have reproductive rights free from government interference. That includes the right to an abortion, birth control, prenatal care, and care when giving birth. As a Supreme Court decision looms on Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 case that established a person's right to an abortion, Marissa Kovach with the ACLU of Michigan says it's important that all Michiganders are protected regardless of the outcome. She notes the state has a law on the books criminalizing virtually all abortions, but it's been dormant since the Roe decision.
If the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade or puts enough of a dent in it, that means abortion in Michigan could very well be illegal. So we need to do everything possible and use every single tool in our tool shed to ensure that that doesn't happen.
More than two-thirds of Michigan voters have said they want the Supreme Court to uphold Roe and think Michigan should repeal its 1931 law banning abortion in the latest poll from Detroit News and WDIV-TV. In the same survey, almost one in five voters said they believe Roe v. Wade should be overturned. Bonsitu Kitaba, also with the ACLU of Michigan, says it's important that the effort is a ballot measure for a constitutional amendment instead of legislation. She explains the legislature can't reverse an amendment passed by voters. The only way to change it would be another constitutional amendment. Kitaba thinks politicians shouldn't be able to make decisions about their constituents' bodies.
This constitutional amendment would pave the way for greater access and greater autonomy for people to make decisions and those decisions to be respected in their healthcare choices.
But to get a petition onto the ballot, the campaign has to collect more than 425,000 signatures. Other groups in support include Planned Parenthood Advocates of Michigan and Michigan Voices. This is Lily Bolke with Michigan News Connection.
California approaches a deadline to vote on a bill that would require corporations to report their carbon emissions to the state. Large polluters are putting up a fight. Here's Suzanne Potter.
A bill to require big corporations to be transparent about their own carbon footprint needs a vote in the California Senate by the legislative deadline on Monday, or it will die. Senate Bill 260 would require U.S.-based corporations that do business in California and make more than $1 billion a year in revenue to disclose their full greenhouse gas emissions to the state. Melissa Romero with California Environmental Voters says the data is necessary to fight global warming.
Because we can't really have a serious conversation about reducing carbon emissions without addressing the corporate sector's contribution to pollution, when just 100 companies are responsible for 71% of global industrial emissions.
Senate Bill 260 has long lists of supporters and opponents. The bill doesn't include details of how it would be enforced, and opponents say it would increase the costs for companies that have to comply. The bill would also require the California Air Resources Board to produce a report that estimates how much these companies would have to reduce their emissions in order to avoid overall global temperature increases over 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's considered the limit to avoid climate catastrophe. Romero notes that companies would have to release data not only on their energy usage, but about their carbon footprint up and down the supply chain.
That is really where the biggest information gap exists, and also where a lot of the emissions from large corporations are coming from.
Critics of the bill claim it would discourage big companies from doing business with smaller ones that are unable to meet the greenhouse gas reporting requirements. California has set a goal to lower greenhouse gas emissions to 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new kids' book is teaching kids how to speak up against climate change. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Most kids' books about the environment encourage children to adopt earth-friendly habits, like taking shorter showers and recycling. But in a new release called A Kid's Book About Climate Change, the authors focus on the bigger picture.
And the approach we took was really to talk about the systemic nature of the issue.
Olivia Greenspan co-wrote the book with Zanaji Artis. Both authors are environmental advocates. And Artis says working to change the systemic causes of climate change is the most effective way to make an impact.
The decisions that we have available to us are there because of systems and larger corporations and government decisions. And so our ability to turn on the lights and have it be powered by renewable energy or natural gas, that's a decision that's made by someone else, and it's a larger system related to our energy grid. And so we want people to really think about what it means to be a part of this system and how that relates to climate change.
Greenspan says she hopes the book empowers kids to speak up and advocate for change.
I hope kids walk away understanding that a stable climate is their right and that they are more powerful than they believe.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Dozens of potential unmarked graves have been discovered at another Canadian residential school for Indigenous children following the shocking discovery of hundreds of bodies last year. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The search across Canada for unmarked grave sites at former residential schools has resulted in another grim discovery. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a First Nation in British Columbia says it has found more than 90 potential unmarked graves at a former residential school.
The St. Joseph's Mission School is run by the Catholic Church. It operated from 1891 to 1981. According to the Williams Lake First Nation, a recent geophysical survey, as well as ground-penetrating radar, was used to find the potential graves. Willie Sellers is the chief of the Williams Lake First Nation. He says, as is the case with many other residential schools across Canada, the real story about what occurred at the St. Joseph Mission has been intentionally obscured.
There's clear evidence that religious entities, the federal government, and the RCMP have knowingly participated in the destruction of records and the cover-up of criminal allegations. For decades, there were reports of neglect and abuse at the St. Joseph's Mission, and worse, there were reports of children dying or disappearing from the facility.
Sellers says the findings so far are only preliminary, since only a fraction of the 1,200-acre site has been searched. Sellers also says the investigative team found complaints that went unheeded about conditions at the school and evidence of children's bodies being disposed of. 50 of the 93 potential graves were found outside the school cemetery. Last year, hundreds of unmarked graves were found at the sites of former residential schools in British Columbia and Saskatchewan. From the late 1800s, about 150,000 Native children were forced to attend the government-funded church-run schools. Thousands were abused, many died. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Cherokee Nation Film Office announced Tuesday it will be offering a film incentive program of up to $1 million in annual funding for productions filmed within the Cherokee Nation's 14-county reservation in Oklahoma. The incentive program will not only promote diversity, inclusion, and accurate Native American representation, but the tribe hopes to create economic development and job growth in the film and television industry. The program offers increased funding for employing Native Americans and using Native-owned businesses. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr.
The list of substantial benefits in launching this powerful economic tool within our reservation is significant. The program further reinforces our commitment and support of these flourishing industries. It will benefit local businesses and make it possible for Oklahomans to train and work locally while pursuing their dreams in all types of positions. It opens more doors for Indigenous creators to tell our stories to the world. We are very excited about the impact this will have on Cherokee families, our communities, and businesses throughout Northeast Oklahoma.
According to the tribe, the film office opened in 2019 and became the first certified Native American Film Commission to open in the U.S. Applications for the tribe's film incentive will open March 1st. More information can be found online at cherokee.film. Save the Redwoods League and the Intertribal Sinkione Wilderness Council announced Tuesday a partnership to protect redwood forest land on tribal territory in Mendocino County, California. The league purchased property of more than 500 acres in 2020 and has donated the property to the Council for Conservation. The Council is a tribal nonprofit made up of 10 federally recognized Northern California tribal nations with cultural connections to the lands and waters of traditional Sinkione and neighboring tribal territories. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 26, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Josh Salem. The producer is myself, Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Jonah Chester, Lily Bolke, Suzanne Potter, and Mary Sherman. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. The podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.